Welcome to the Member Roadshow, episode number 167. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me. We're in Chi-Town, the Windy City, Chicago, for the first time ever. This is ridiculous. I've never been in Chicago. Believe
it or not. That's crazy.
For all these years of Dan Stupp living close by, of Matt Erickson living close by, I have never covered an event in Chicago, and now I'm here for UFC 225. Whitaker versus Romero, too. And I should say, even at this late hour, I won't reveal how late the hour is because it's pretty late, and we got weigh-ins to be in, like, literally, we're gonna be hard pressed to finish the podcast in time so that we can get to the weigh-ins because that's how hardcore we are.
We're gonna cut it short.
But Jose Youngs is here from Fansided.
What's up, guys?
Dude, the man that knows how to control Mother Earth.
Oh, man. That's the last time we really did one of these.
That is the last time we did one of these.
I forgot Mother Earth's ride through the galaxy.
Mother Earth is us.
Mother Earth bringing us through the vortex of life, a.k.a. Glendale the Phoenix.
That was crazy, man. But I'm glad we're all back together. And I should say, it is very late this night. But it was a cool night, right? I mean, we had a really cool night. The UFC actually was really cool, man. They put something together for us. They had a media function that was at the headquarters of Constellation Beverages, which is the owners of Modelo, which Modelo is now the big beer sponsor of the UFC. So basically,
not just Modelo.
Yeah, and
Ballast Point.
We had a Ballast Point home game.
I
mean, listen, how cool was that? I'm not gonna say. I mean, that was one of the coolest things we ever
got. That was pretty darn cool. That was pretty. I'll be honest. Like to roll up in their, I guess, building / campus, whatever, and the fact that they have this room dedicated to their after work hours, their office meetings, whatever, and it was just like all these delicious beers on tap, all these delicious beers still in bottles in the fridge. I mean,
let's keep it real.
This company's doing it right.
Let's keep it real. We would be fired because this basically said they were like, look, we have this thing. And if you want to just show up and have a couple drinks after work, you can.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure we'd be fired, like, in the first week.
Well, self-control has never been our best.
No.
Our best character.
So that happened. And then after that, you know, we hung out for a little bit. And then we went to Pequod's.
Yeah, my favorite spot.
So we have been experiencing the whole
not just your favorite spot, but...
Well, yeah, CM Punk said, listen, if you want good Chicago pizza, this is where you go. And we had both the deep dish, we had the thin crust.
At Lou Malnati. You're talking about today.
No, I'm just saying tonight. We've experienced the whole thing. We did the Lou Malnati's.
Yep.
We did the
Giordano's.
I will say this. I'm just going to put it on record right now. If I had to pick between Lou Malnati's and Giordano's, I'm Lou Malnati's all day.
Yeah.
All day.
See, I like Giordano's, and then I was, because I'm not from Chicago, and one of my camera woman, is from Chicago, and I was like,
I seen you there.
Don't do that. And I was like, oh, I like Giordano's, and she gave me, like, that's so basic. And I was like, I feel terrible now.
Oh,
like,
no.
She's like, that's hella basic.
Yeah, I mean, they're very different. I mean, like, the butter crust that we got at Lou Malnati's is good, but, like, the fact that, like, if you get the classic from Lou Malnati's, it's sausage. Sausage and tomato and cheese.
And I know you're a big fan of sausage.
I love me some motherfucking sausage.
Good Lord.
Fellas, let me tell you, I love me some sausage. And pizza. But the fact that Giordano's, yeah, it was very different. Giordano's is like
it's too
thicker.
Cheesy. It's too cheesy.
It's almost like lasagna in a pizza.
Give me the Lou Malnati's
form.
all day. The Lou Malnati's is crispy.
Yeah.
It's nice. But we went to Pequod's, and I will say, we didn't go there only because it was Jose Youngs. CM Punk gave us the recommendation. He said, look, if you want a spot, I get it, man. You know, these are the two chains.
Yeah.
But go there. And it's a little dry, but we went there, and it was fun.
It was fun. Good.
And I got to say.
It was delicious.
If you're in Chicago. So this is what's weird. So people that may listen to the show, they'll be like, what the hell? John Morgan's never gone to Chicago. But don't forget, Matt Erickson lives right outside of town, but unfortunately, we've had some We've had some staffing issues. We've had some staff emergencies, and he was supposed to be hanging out. So this got to be my first Chicago event. And I will say this. I've never been to Chicago before. I've never. I mean, as way I know, right? As many towns and cities in the world as I've been, I've never been. I will say this: Chicago.
So you've never been to Chicago, Chicago ever?
No, I've never. I mean, I've flown through Chicago, you know, dozens of
times.
Through
the airport, yeah.
But I've never been here. I will say this for anybody that, you know, for whatever reason likes this show as a travel show or whatever: Chicago is dope.
Yeah.
In Chicago's the summer.
Chicago is a beautiful spot.
In the summer. In the summer. I know you guys have been here in the winter. I know Cole Coffee has been here in times where, like, his camera equipment is like, freezing up. It doesn't work. But I will say, during the summertime, man, this downtown area, there's so many bars and restaurants. And, like, people are just walking around. And, you know, the river's coming through here and whatever. I mean, I'm just saying, in the summertime, and again, this is my first time here, and I've never been here during the wintertime. But I am telling you, this is a dope-ass town to just go hang out and have a good time in.
Yeah, Chicago, when it's like 80-some degrees or whatever it's been lately, is a whole lot different than Chicago when it's like 20 or 30 degrees. Yeah, I mean, everybody's outside. Everybody's smiling. They're having a good time. But, yeah, with that whole lakefront effect and when it gets near and it's winter, it is so cold and brutal. I mean, it's ungodly.
Just the wind.
Yeah.
It's the wind that, and it's like, since the buildings are so tall, it's like that big vortex that just like sucks all the wind. It's like this big swirling motion. And then you come in off the subway and you walk up the stairs and you just get blasted with that Arctic wind. But in the summer, I know there's an app. It's called like Chicago Parks or Park Chicago. It basically gives you a map of all the outdoor festivals in Chicago. And it's like there's one every day in some part of Chicago, there's some festival, and it's awesome.
I believe it.
Even even the guy that was driving us home tonight was like, oh, yeah, there's a blues festival weekend with this and this and this is going on. I mean, like, this is a hopping town, man. Like, Chicago is legit.
Much respect
to
Chicago.
A lively town.
Much respect to Chicago. It's what. All right, so listen, we're here for UFC 225, Whitaker versus Romero 2. I mean, it seems weird to even give it a name, right? Because this card is so stacked. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, normally we're only talking about the main event, but this card is just absolutely ridiculous. Let's just start with the main event. Robert Whittaker versus Yoel Romero. Guys, I mean, an amazing fight. No question about it. It's weird. The middleweight division is pretty weird, right? I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, I did get frustrated about the whole thing about George St. Pierre jumping in and, you know, all these things changed. It frustrated me, right? But Robert Whittaker is legit, man. This dude is – I mean, he's as good as they come. It's funny because let's just say it. We were at the media day today, right? People weren't even talking to him. And that's weird. A champion where people aren't even, like, crowded around him. And I get it because he's a guy that doesn't necessarily – I don't want to say he doesn't like media, but I don't think he cares a lot about media. I think he cares more just about his career, about his family, about his money, about all those things. He doesn't really care whether we like talking to him or all those things. So that was bizarre. And then of course, Yoel Romero, who is dangerous as they come. I mean, crazy. Lost the first fight when Robert got hurt. So that kind of makes you think about things. But then, you know, he's as dangerous as they come, Yoel Romero. But then he has this weird thing where he shows up this week and he doesn't work out at the open workouts.
He has sunglasses on.
He's got sunglasses on. His eyes have been dilated, which basically boils down to just having, like, a test on his eyes. But it just seems weird on fight week. I don't know. It's just – the middleweight division is always weird, and now there's more weirdness, you know, the eye test and the workouts, and then I don't know. What do you feel about this?
It feels like 2018, every single fight card, there's drama.
Yeah.
Something's happened. The biggest drama we've really had is Colby's trash talk, which isn't really drama. That's just comes with the territory. Sure. The only drama in terms of fights changing is Bobby Green falling out. But when I talked to Clay Guida earlier in the week, he's like, was anyone really surprised? I mean, he's fallen out of a few fights. I mean,
Bobby Yellow, as he calls him.
He called him Bobby Yellow. So he's like, Bobby Yellow, you're a coward, not a true fighter, all that stuff. But, I mean, I was more bummed. I don't want to say I wasn't surprised, because that kind of paints Bobby Green in a negative light, but it's when Bobby falls off, you're not like, oh man, that sucks, because you're used to it, want to say. But then Charles Oliveira popped up, and I liked that fight too, but that's like the biggest drama in terms of fights falling out.
Yeah.
And I feel like now that I brought it up,
I'd say you kind of screwed us.
Seeing as I brought it up.
Again, I don't want to reveal exactly how few hours we are away from weigh-ins, because we're probably out later tonight than we should be, but we are just a few hours away from weigh-ins. Well, all right, so let's just say this. So we won't ruin anything with that. Give me a talk on this, Jose. Like, I mean, when I break down this fight with Whitaker and Romero, right? Like, I mean, look, we already saw Whitaker beat Romero, and he did it over five rounds. And man, Whitaker looked good. You know, you go back and watch that first fight, and Whitaker definitely got hurt very, very early on. He had some issues there, and he gutted through it. And so part of me just says it's that easy to break it down, right? I mean, look, we already saw Whitaker go through issues, and then he beat Romero the first time around. Now that we know technically he's at 100%, I mean, maybe he could experience an injury again, but, and man, he looked good. Dude, we watched the open workouts the other day, right? I mean, how good did he look? He looked fast. He looked quick. He looked strong.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get to see Romero work out because of the dilation of his eyes, so we didn't get to see him. And I always like to see Romero work out because he's such a beast of a man. It was funny because I asked Whitaker, I said, listen, I mean, you've had a chance to be in there with 25 minutes with this guy, right? He has this weird timing. He gets very slow, very reserved, and all of a sudden he explodes and he comes out of this weird thing, you know. And you know, do you understand that timing more now that you've been in there for 25 minutes? He said, "No, I really don't." You know what I mean? I mean, this dude is still a beast of a man, and I kind of respect. I mean, I respect that attitude. Just say like, "Yeah, I beat him. Yeah, I went through an injury. Yeah, I did all this, but I'm not taking away that dude is a beast of a man." I mean, I don't know. How do you break this down? Because when I look at this fight, I think we're going to see what we saw the first time around. I really do. That's the way I break it down. But Romero is one of those guys that I just don't know. I just don't know how you handicap him, because he is literally one of a thousand or whatever. I mean, he's so unique in the way that he fights.
Yeah, and I mean, when Romero bounced back against Luke Rockhold, like, yeah, he missed weight, but yeah, it was short notice, had to fly like 20 hours and cutting weight in the air. His striking looked a lot better than we'd ever seen, even against, like, Luke Rockhold's the biggest thing is he's a great striker, great grappler. Probably wasn't going to try and grapple Romero's Olympic silver medals in wrestling, but I don't know what you remember about that fight, but for me, it's that way Romero, like, cut through Rockhold's attack, his stand-up, where he'd basically do the Mayweather thing where he'd put his hands, like his fists, like on his temples, and then just shove his forehead into Luke Rockhold's chest and just not finagle his way through defense, just like bulldoze through Luke Rockhold's attack. And I'm not comparing Rockhold to Whitaker. Rockhold utilizes a lot more kicks, and Whitaker usually sets up that one kick with his angles, with his fists, but that's a weird defensive tactic you don't see in MMA. Yep. And I think Romero's built, his body and build is perfect for that. He has such wide shoulders. He's not tall, so most fighters are punching down, like, and he's covered up like this. And then when he gets in front of you, he can either just blast you like he did to Rockhold, or he can just throw you on the ground. And like you said, Whitaker, when I talked to him, he's like, "I'm not looking forward to this fight. The first time I fought was uncomfortable and annoying." He's like, fighting Yoel Romero is annoying, and he's probably going to fight him for 50 minutes straight.
Yep.
The last time we saw that happen for a champion was Johnny Hendricks when he fought Robbie Lawler back-to-back, because Johnny got hurt the first one, then came back and lost. So that's the only real thing we have to base it on him.
It is weird. Cole Coffey, what do you think? I mean, it's kind of funny to break down a fight where you just – I mean, I wouldn't say you just saw the guy beat him, but the last time Whitaker was out there, we saw him beat Romero. But, you know, as Jose said, I mean – To beat that guy, you know, 10 rounds in a row seems really difficult. And, I mean, dude, Romero is so dangerous.
Yeah.
I'm torn on this because I feel like the more time you're in there with Romero, the more you get used to him. Like, I do believe those 5 rounds are going to be valuable, even if Whitaker was hurt. And that's why I picked Whitaker. I did pick Whitaker. But, dude, Romero is so dangerous, man. He is scary as hell. So, what's your feel on this as you look at this fight? Are we seeing what we saw before?
I mean, I'm still leaning to what I learned after, you know, other fights where I still don't want to bet against Robert Whittaker. But it's funny going back when this fight was leading up and watching the past fight, I forgot how much Yoel was very effective in getting Robert down to the ground. Robert popped back up, but Yoel took him down a decent amount of times and did some damage with his hands, where in, you know, memory kind of plays a funny trick on you after a while. You know how the outcome is, and then your mind, you're like, oh, okay, Robert won. I'm pretty sure he was dominant that whole fight. And that's not the case. You know, Yoel had his, Yoel had his moments in that fight and very clearly could have pulled out that fight. So if it stays how that fight was and we see another repeat, from what I can remember, it was a very close, very tense fight watching it. But I still trust the fact that, you know, and I was very impressed with the fact that because I don't remember feeling watching that fight happen thinking, wow, Yoel's tired.
Right.
Yoel's out of it. Like, even, you know, now when we think about this fight, we keep thinking like, oh, Yoel's going to tire out. But he's going to whatever. But I don't remember that happening.
He slowed down, but he was reserving.
But he was still there.
And he was dangerous.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So if that's the case, and he's learned upon that fact, you know, he's probably going to be even more dangerous deeper into this fight than what we saw the first one. But it's not enough to still sway me. And part of that's just me being silly, the fact that I decided when I've seen Robert pull these fights out that at this point,
so good.
I just don't want to bet against him right now. So,
dude, he's so good. Watching that open workout the other day, and we got the whole open workout.
He did a legit workout, so I respect that.
Oh my god, just the way he moves, his speed is. I mean, it looks nice. It looks nice.
Yeah, and he was very evasive. That was the biggest thing that I took away from that open workout was, as they were, you know, training. It wasn't about hitting the mitts and really showing his hand speed. To me, it was more about just, it was movement of the feet, but it was also movement of his head. He had great head movement throughout that whole thing. So for me, that felt like that was the biggest thing that he probably continued to focus. That was one of the things we saw in his last fight. He has great head movement.
It's worth watching that footage. We have it all on YouTube. I agree.
He has really, really good head movement. And I think in a case like this, when you have a guy that has a lot of power like Yoel does, you know, not moving your head and moving your head is a difference whether you're going to go out in the first or whether you're going to actually make it into the later round. So seeing that good head movement that he has, I'm confident he's been doing work.
I think we're in for another tense 5-round fight. No question about it. All right, let me talk to you guys about the co-main event, because here's what's interesting about this whole week to me, right? Like, we just talked about a fantastic main event, but I really don't feel like that's what people care about right now. And that's what's interesting to me, because I think what people care about right now is twofold. Colby Covington and CM Punk. And our web traffic shows it. Jose, I'm sure you could probably – I'm just guessing that yours probably shows the same, right?
Yep.
It's Colby Covington and CM Punk. And everybody – I mean, if you look at social media, if you look at the hardcore MMA journalists or whatever, they're like, I don't care about Colby Covington. I don't care about CM Punk. But this whole week, it's not about this incredibly intriguing middleweight title fight between Robert Whittaker and Yoel Romero. It's more about Colby Covington and CM Punk. So let's start with Colby Covington and Rafael Dos Anjos.
I love this fight. I love this fight so much.
I was about to say, let me take a deep breath. Man, I love this fight a lot. I love this fight a lot. And I know people aren't fans of Colby Covington. And I get it. I get it. And people don't like his trash talk. And it's crazy, man. It's over the top. And you know, you start bringing Trump into it and Snowflake and all that. I get that. I will say, I mean, we were having a discussion earlier, and I will say I'm still on the fence a little bit, right? I will say this. I'm still on the fence a little bit. When he calls Brazilians dirty animals.
Filthy animals.
Filthy animals. Filthy animals. Okay, listen. I've been to Brazil 29 times. I love Brazil, man. I really do. I love Brazil. Rio de Janeiro, one of my favorite cities in the world. Man. See, I even threw Rio. I was even trying to be respectful.
That's legit.
I love it. I love it. I mean, I didn't get robbed there, so maybe that's why I didn't like. But I love it. But I will say this, like, so you know, earlier tonight we saw the Vegas Golden Knights lose.
R.I.P.
And it sucked. It hurt. It hurt.
It did. Yeah, fuck you, Washington.
Because you know I've been a lifelong fan. I mean, as long as the Vegas Golden Knights have
been
around.
Me too, as long as they've been around.
Yeah. But it's weird. So, you know, you see the people in Washington celebrating on the street, and of course they celebrate on the street. Of course they should. That's their team. Yeah. So if you look at the fans of Washington on the street and you're like, filthy animals.
Yeah.
It sounds stupid, right? Like, it sounds stupid. Nobody would say, you're racist. You're horrible. I can't believe you're saying this. It's kind of dumb that you're even saying it. But so that's where I get, because I get why people hate Colby Covington. I get it, man. I get it why they hate the trash talk. And again, the snowflake and the Donald Trump and the, all this. But you know, he does say, "Look, I walk right up to the line." I don't know. I'm back and forth. I guess part of it is that, like, I've liked Colby Covington. I've liked him as a fighter. I've liked him as a fighter. I believe he is way more skilled than people give him credit for. I think his wrestling is top-notch. I think his scrambling game is ridiculous. Dude, if you go back and watch his tape, man, he gets in bad position and gets out of them with incredible quickness. You know, his striking game, of course, at least something to be – but I don't know. People hate him so much, and I'm 50-50 because I get why they hate him. I totally get why they hate him. But I don't know if they're entirely justified. So let's just start there. Before we break down the fight, let me ask you, Jose, because you don't work for MMA Junkie. We don't get to talk to you on a daily basis. I mean, I get why people hate him. I get why people hate him. But, I mean, is he totally ridiculous? Like, does he not deserve some respect at all? Because maybe he talked himself into this title shot. But so what if he did? The guy's trying to make money.
I think he did talk himself into the title shot, but I don't say that as a bad thing. Like, at the end of the day, title shot, like, if he beats Rafael Dos Anjos, what are we going to say? Like, I mean, I guess he deserved it. I mean, he backed up at, like, Conor McGregor. His big thing is like, oh, he talks himself into a fight against Jose Aldo, and then what happened? 13 seconds later, what is anyone saying to Conor McGregor?
Right.
The thing with Colby is, outside of fighting, he's embraced the bad guy role in a lot of other aspects. Like, he tweeted the full spoilers to Star Wars. Like, he's tweeting the spoilers
Dick
to the Marvel
move.
Event. Exactly. So it's like, he knows what he's doing. It's not like he's talking trash to Rafael Dos Anjos and calling everyone snowflakes and calling everyone pencil neck geeks eating Cheetos. And, like, he's taking pictures with these porn stars on Twitter. Like, there was, like, someone asked him about, like Amanda Nunes, like, got upset while he said about Brazil. And then he talked about Nina Ansarov, and he talked about Tisha Torres and Raquel Pennington. Like, these are his teammates. He knows what he's doing. Like, he does, and he's saying things that I think are just shockingly offensive to a lot of people that don't even, like, we know Colby's doing it because of fighting. If you don't like fighting and you just see this guy spoiling Star Wars, talking bad about his teammates and doing all this stuff, like, that's a bad dude. It's not selling a fight. It's just a bad dude. We know what he's doing. I think a lot of the world doesn't know what he's doing.
But, dude, here's the thing is that, like, it's so weird because I consider myself, like, a purist in some degrees. Sure. Like, I love the sport, right? I love the sport. But the bottom line is I look at our traffic this week.
I totally get it.
It's Colby Covington and it's CM Punk.
I totally get it.
The two people that everybody says don't belong. Dude, if Demetrius Johnson was fighting this week, would he be getting the traffic of this? No, and
the only traffic he would get is us asking Colby Covington about Demetrius Johnson.
Right? I mean, that's it. So, I mean, it's such a double-edged sword to me because I hate it, man. I want this thing to be about the sport, man. I want this thing to be about I love the competition aspect of MMA. I love it. But you know what, man? To go into an open workout session and to have a whole crowd of people cussing and yelling and chanting and screaming. I know that may be weird, but that's something. That's what you need. You need something, right?
I mean, he's staying at a different hotel. Like, he's like, I'm staying in a different hotel. I have my own security. They're never going to let me fight in Brazil. Like, the favela hitmen have a hit on me. Like, Colby is saying everything so confidently that you have to believe him. Like, it's... And he even came up in his scrum where he trained with Chael Sonnen.
Yep.
And he saw what Chael did. Like, Chael said, like, I fought Yushin Okami. Yushin Okami was number two in the world at the time. And he was on the prelims. And Chael was like, this is an insult. And took it upon himself to become the draw. Whether he won or lost, you were going to pay to see Chael Sonnen fight. And that's still the case where he's headlining fights. And he's now talked himself into a fight with Fedor, pretty much. Like,
yep.
He's the only one who's fought Fedor, John Jones, and Anderson Silva, and he pretty much got there with his mouth. Like, there's no way he could earn that shot against John Jones.
And he got a lot of paychecks along the way.
Colby's taken aspects of Conor and Chael. It's
all
working.
Right. Cole Coffey, you've spent a lot of time around both these guys. You can't disrespect who Colby Covington is as a fighter. I mean, if you really watch the sport, you have to see, yes, he has earned his way there. Now, the discussion part of it definitely helped him, but what do you think about this fight? I mean, I don't think Rafael dos Anjos is bothered at all. Like, you know,
he isn't.
You talk about Conor McGregor. I mean, Conor McGregor has gotten under people's skin. Conor McGregor was under Jose Aldo's skin, no question about it, man. He bothered him. I don't think RDA is bothered at all. So what do you think? When I break down these two guys and I look at them, I don't think the mind game has had the effect that it maybe had in other situations.
Yeah.
But what do you also think about that fight?
Did you ever switch your pick, by the way? Did you leave it as the mistake that you made?
All right. So we're just
going
to throw it out there? Let's throw it out there. I meant to pick Rafael dos Anjos, but I think it was almost subconsciously.
Because I was talking so much about it.
I turned in my pick as Colby Covington. So when you look at our stat picks, I picked Colby Covington. But when you pointed out to me, and you did, you pointed out to me, you were like, bro, did you mean to pick Colby? And I was like, I didn't mean to.
Because you're like, no.
But I'm like, now that I did, I'm going to stick with it. So yeah. I'll be honest with you. I'm torn. Because I think the easy pick is just like, bro, RDA is too good. He's too good. Look, and I do believe RDA is the better striker. I will say this. Right. I've heard a lot of people say, and RDA is a black belt. Dude, if this fight goes to the ground, I think Colby has no problem. I think Colby can hold top control.
Yeah.
No worry. I know that the RDA has great jiu-jitsu and all that, but if Colby can get the takedown, dude, I believe he can just hold top position and stay out of submission.
I mean, you go back and look at what Usman was able to do to Damian Maia. Whoa. You take a top-level jiu-jitsu guy and you take a top-level wrestling guy, and it negates it. It just takes it out of the picture. They can get away from all that deep, dark waters that everybody's afraid of. And, you know, when it comes to this one, the only thing that's different and that's, like, interesting about this that makes me doubt, I as well picked Colby, and part of it was just, part of it was when I decided before I really understood that it was an interim belt, I felt that Colby has a way of getting underneath guys' skins. Mm-hmm. And then I was a little, but then, you know, realizing that it's an interim belt, then I started getting a little bit worried that whether he was going to, unfortunately, our favorite guy, Cowboy Cerrone, would maybe pull one of these things where something happens in the big moments and he doesn't really show up. And there's still very, very real chance that could possibly happen. But in this case, you know, I still think Colby has a lot of dangerous weapons that most people aren't accounting for. And I kind of assumed that we wouldn't really see the RDA that has shown up in the past and is such a dominant force. But this week and even today, at the face-offs that they did at the media day, the thing that really sunk into me, which kind of made me almost doubt my pick, is the fact that RDA hasn't said a word.
Not a word. He's not getting emotional about this.
And that's the thing where I'm like, oh shit, maybe I'm wrong.
Colby's bigger.
Colby, and that's why I think
Colby's a better wrestler.
I think people forget Colby when you see him on his own, and you think of in the back of your head like RDA. RDA has come in at different sizes, and he looks like a decently sized guy. Colby, when you look at him and you don't see him next to somebody else, he kind of almost has an undersized look to him.
Yep.
But when they are side by side today, he looked big. Yep. He was the bigger of the two. And but the thing that still got me, Colby was just chirping. He was chirping, 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 chirping. And he was chirping enough that Dana stuck his hand in there like, okay, this might pop off. And you could feel the tension. Like, yep. RDA was staring through his eyes and out the back of Colby's head. But he never said a word. And he's done that. He did that for
Connor.
Connor. He did that for a lot of the guys that he's fought. He's chirped back. And I don't know if this is just a matter of him, but that could be twofold. One, you can think that, okay, he's not getting emotional. He's learned something about it. Or he's steaming so much about this guy that he doesn't want to just release this tirade of words. Like, in his mind, he's thinking, like, hold it together, hold it together. I'm just going to pound this dude on fight night. And that's not being in control either.
Right.
Just the fact that he is quiet doesn't mean that he's completely in control with his emotions, but he at least looked it.
I'm excited about this fight. I'm excited about this fight, and it's easy to just look. I get why people hate Colby. I get it. I totally understand. I totally get it. But if all you're doing is sitting back and going, "Ah, Colby sucks. I can't wait to see this guy lose," like, bro, you're just missing the wrong guy. Like, he's got skills. So
he does have skills.
He has skills.
I can see why people are.
Oh, I totally get why people hate him. And to prove why people hate him, let's just play the interview. Yeah. You and
probably
I,
the best thing to do.
We got to sit down and talk to him for a little bit.
Let the people judge for themselves.
That's what I say. We tried to have like a normal discussion. You can't have a normal discussion with Colby. No. Colby is should we say that he's different off camera or on camera? Yeah, I mean, he is.
Well, he is, but
he's different off camera.
I mean,
he is and he isn't, though.
Oh, he's the same guy.
Because
he knows when to turn it on.
Yeah, but when you're
done. Isn't that the point?
But when you're done doing an interview, it's not like you just ask him, like, all right, so what's for dinner or whatever.
All right,
like, so, we got off camera and he's polite and he's whatever, but it's not like you're having to. Like, we didn't.
It's not like he goes, oh, by the way, I'm so scared because this dude's going to kill me.
Yeah, right. It's not like he turns the actor off. I mean, like, he's just very quiet. He was
that's
very
true.
Quiet.
I mean, you saw that
and if
video.
Anything, that's it, is that he's quiet. You know, he's quieter than what he seems.
That is true.
I mean, you saw that, I think it was, what, Anatomy of a Fighter, Anatomy of a Fight, backstage at UFC 223. They were following Khabib around, and it was before that big press conference with, like, all the fighters on stage, and Kamaru and Colby, they obviously weren't fighting each other, but they were in the back.
Yeah.
And Kamaru is just chirping at Colby. Like,
yeah.
we're next to each other now. What you gonna do? What you gonna do? Why aren't you saying nothing to me? And Colby just stood there quietly, just looking at him and just like shaking his head.
He's like, I don't care. Because
as soon as he's on the stage, turns on.
What? Yeah, that's it. Because he's like, dude, because we're not gonna make any money back here.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We can argue each other behind the stage.
But
all
I also said too. I think Kamaru's in his head.
I do too.
Oh,
I think
for
he's
sure.
in his head.
That'd be a tough fight.
You know, like
for
when
sure.
that fight finally happens, then we got some shit
that's
to talk
fight.
About.
It's gonna be.
We got some shit to talk about. Like Kamaru's in his head because I guarantee if it was anybody else. He was still chirp a little bit. He was still chirp a little bit. He realized that Kamaru can literally negate his ground
but
game.
But I'm so intrigued by this fight because everybody
game.
Hates Colby so much that all they want to do is just be like, this fight doesn't matter. RDA is going to smoke him. And it's possible. Look, RDA could come out there and flatten him in the first round. It's possible. But I'm telling you, if you're sitting back going like, this fight is stupid and nobody cares, first of all, that crowd that was cussing and yelling and chanting, they show that Colby has done the right thing. Yeah. And, dude, I'm telling you, he's a better fighter than people, like, want to give him credit for. I think this is a close fight.
He does. He's got good hands, and he's got great wrestling. I mean, I wouldn't say that he's got the best jiu-jitsu, but when you got good wrestling, you don't need good jiu-jitsu because if you're not a jiu-jitsu guy, all you need to do is stop the jiu-jitsu and impose your game plan. And,
he's going to get touched. Dude, I'm telling you, he's going to get touched up a little bit, but if he gets those takedowns.
Because if he gets confident and if he gets a little cocky out there, that's the part he's got to be wary of. Because if he thinks he wants to just stand and bang and that RDA doesn't have the power to hurt him, that's going to be his downfall because RDA has a lot of power. Damian Maia was successful on the feet against him. I mean, that's a big deal. But I've been saying for a long time that Damian Maia has better hands than most people give him credit for. Like, Damian Maia's going to eventually, before he's done, knock somebody the fuck out. And it would have been cool if it was Kobe just so people would see that he has it. But it just goes to show that he's a little bit overconfident in his chin. And he's a little bit overconfident in his skill, his stand-up skills.
Whitaker and Romero is going to be another sick fight. I think it's going five rounds. Again, I think it's going to be another tense battle. And then we got Colby Covington versus RDA, which means all. I think it means all.
That's going to be a great end of the night.
All right. So here is Colby Covington. We got to sit down with Colby Covington. And, hell, why not listen to this guy?
Colby, you've been working to a UFC title shot since your debut, man. I know you always thought you'd be here. Now that you're here, you know, a couple days out from this opportunity, What's the emotion like? What does it feel like?
Oh, it's a great feeling, man. This is everything I dreamed of. You know, how ironic that it's, you know, the same day as the anniversary of D-Day, you know, the day that the Americans invaded the beaches of Normandy. And just like that, I'm going to take the fight to this filthy animal. And, you know, I salute this fight to the men and women, the brave men and women of the U.S. who fought and lost their lives at the beaches of Normandy.
Critics are going to say that you talked your way into this fight, right? I mean, how do you feel when you hear that you know, this is all about show, not necessarily that you earned your way into this title fight? How do you feel when you hear that?
You know, I just have to laugh. You know, I just have to call them a nerd because those are the same people that, you know, have an opinion about everything. Obviously, their feelings are hurt, so they're letting their feelings dictate their judgment. So, you know, that's their opinion. I don't really care about their opinion.
Your personality, though, probably did help. And you've got a nice winning streak. I mean, you've had the results, right? But the personality, the willingness to put yourself out there, I mean, that probably helped you a little bit as well, right?
Maybe, maybe not. You know, who, no way to tell. But I think after Saturday night, I think everybody's going to know that it was my fighting that did the talking.
I was going to say, I mean, does that concern you at all that maybe people, when they talk about you, because when I hear people break you down, when I hear people talk about you, I don't hear anybody talking about your technique. I don't hear anybody talking about your style. I hear them talking about your mouth and your social media. Does that bug you? Do you feel like maybe people, you know, haven't been giving you the respect that you deserve as an actual fighter?
No, it doesn't bug me, man. I don't let anything get to me. I have no feelings, no emotions. So, you know, you can say whatever you want to say to me. If you want to come over to @ColbyCovMMA, my Instagram page or Twitter page, you can say whatever you want. You know, all these people are snowflakes. They're all these Cheeto-eating dorks that are in their mom's basements that have an opinion, and their opinion doesn't matter to me. So, whatever.
We see a lot of hate. We see, like, a lot of people, you know, coming at you. Do you get many people on social media or in person or whatever that come up to you and say, I love you, man. Like, you're my favorite fighter. I love what you're doing.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, a lot of the things that I say to the fighters and the fans and everybody else, you know, are a lot of the things that a lot of the fans think. So I'm just saying and expressing for a lot of people that don't have a voice and saying something that they wish they could say. So, you know, I do have a big following, and a lot of haters, they're just confused fans. You know, they end up turning eventually. I've had so many fans that after the Dung Hum Kim fight, they hated on me. And then after leading up to Damian Maia fight, they're like, oh, we love what you're doing. We understand it, you know. So they all eventually turn, you know, and so... You know, that's just part of the process.
Championship belt on the line. We know it's an interim title. Give me an idea what that means to you. Because, you know, some people, hey, it's a belt, you know. On the other hand, I hear people say, well, it's interim, you know, it doesn't matter. What does this title fight mean to you?
It's everything because it's the undisputed title, in my opinion. You know, Tyron Woodley ducked me for a reason. He didn't want to fight me. He's letting this Brazilian take this ass whooping for him. So he's over gossiping about the Kardashians and Justin Bieber on TMZ. He doesn't want to fight no more. He piggybacked his way to get those big pay-per-view draws off Conor and off John Jones. So, you know, his time is come and gone. My time is now.
I know you can't look past what's at hand here, but I mean, do you think about that Woodley fight at all and the opportunity to kind of unify the titles? Because, I mean, he won't say your name. He's, you know, he's trying to, I guess, not discuss you whatsoever. Are you thinking about him at all?
Of course, man. I think about him every day. You know, this fight's been set up. You know, the groundwork is in. So I'm definitely thinking about melting him after I finish Rafi Dos Nachos this Saturday. So Tyron Woodley, you got nowhere to run. You got nowhere to hide. It's time to come give me my belt.
Obviously, you're confident in yourself, but, you know, Rafael, he's got some skins on the wall, right? He's accomplished some things. When you take, you know, maybe the hype out of it or the nationalities out of it or anything like that, I mean, when you just look at the guy as a fighter, I mean, is there anything that impresses you? What do you see in him?
I see a lot of weaknesses. You know, if you look at his record, you know, it's a padded up record. He's 3-2 in his last five fights, and two of those fights are at welterweight. I'm 5-0 at welterweight. So, you know, he beat a one-legged Robbie Lawler who has the most significant strikes to the head in the UFC history. So that's not impressive. He beat a guy, Tarek Safin. Where's he been? No one's heard of him. You know, he beat a guy, Neil Magny, who's, you know, getting beat up by lightweights. He can only beat, you know, jobbers from Europe. So, you know, I don't see much in Ralphie, and I can't wait to send him out on a stretcher this Saturday.
Have you guys crossed paths at all? I wonder what the interaction's been like. Is there any, you know, measuring each other up? What's fight week been like?
Fight week's been good. You know, I get my own hotel. I got my security team behind me. So, you know, I'm away from all the fighters, all the drama. I just get to focus on what's at hand, and that's winning my belt this weekend.
For you to be stationed at another hotel, that doesn't happen a whole lot. I mean, what does that say about you? Did you think, I'm cool with this? Do you hate it? Because now you don't get to go out there and maybe mix it up a little bit. What do you think?
No, I love it. You know, I'm obviously the biggest name in the game. My name's in the headlines every weekend. I'm the talk of the UFC. Whether it's hate or love, it's all the same thing to me. So, you know, I love it. I embrace it. It's part of the role, and it's everything that I came here to do.
The trash talk, the pre-fight. I mean, is that? Do you feel like that's part of the game? I mean, is it a little bit of mental warfare, or is it something you do just to entertain yourself? I mean, is there a strategy behind the way that you conduct yourself?
You know, it's just me being me, man. I have no emotions, no feelings. I don't care what people think of me. You know, that's why I'm different from Conor and guys like Chael. You know, I'm not here to make fans. I'm not trying to please people. I'm doing whatever I want, because that's what bosses do. So I'm not here to make people happy. I'm here to make money.
You know, it's a little bit down the line, but you unify these titles. Your guy Trump's in the news right now, you know, not having champions at the White House. What do you think? Would you be willing to accept an invite? Would you be the first maybe UFC champ to go to the White House?
I'm definitely going to the White House, man. I have to say, you know, what's up with the Philadelphia Eagles, man? What a joke, man. They live in the city of Liberty. I mean, the Liberty Bell is right down the street. Their mascot is the Eagle. That's the American flag's mascot. Like, I just got to say that the Philadelphia Eagles suck, you know, and I can't wait to take the belt to White House, to the Oval Office, and put it on Trump's desk.
What would winning this title mean to you? I mean, because I wonder, you know, you said it might shut up some silence some doubters, you know, some people that are critics. Like, is that something you want to see to prove to everybody, you know, that, look, I'm not fake. I'm not just a talker. I'm a fighter. Does that matter to you?
No, that doesn't matter to me. You know, everybody's going to have an opinion. You know, that's just how the world works. And you see all the people that hated on Trump, and he's got his big following, you know. And just like him, he was the underdog in his lead up to his campaign. And just like him, he didn't care. He grabbed the pussies by the horn, and he ruled. And that's what I'm going to do on Saturday.
Nice. Well, I know you've been playing this fight out in your head. I mean, you've been working towards this moment for a long time. What do you think we see on Saturday? I mean, is this something where you go in there and dominate and shock the world? Do you feel like, you know, you're going to have to go in there and be ready for a five-round battle? I mean, how do you see this thing play out in your head?
You know, he's going to get finished on Saturday night. I see a dominating victory. You know, I'm in the best shape of my life. I put in a lot of cardio rounds with the women in the bedroom, so I'm prepared to go five rounds. But if it doesn't go five rounds, you know, I'm going to leave him in a pool full of blood, and he's going to be sent back to Rio de Janeiro because I'm going to have Trump have him deported.
Welcome back to MMA Roadshow. That was Colby Covington. Come on, who gives you Colby Covington like that? If you like what you're listening to, do us a favor. Log into iTunes. Make sure you subscribe. Leave us some feedback.
Colby, or send Covington. Me a check.
Dude, we've had some great feedback here. I missed these the last couple weeks, so I got to check these out. Chi Town MMA said, listen, I've been an avid listener of the show for a year now. John's insight, knowledge, and enthusiasm of MMA is second to none. I love every aspect of the show, especially cold coffee.
What?
That's right. He then says, my only gripe would be Fiasco Jones. That guy is just too loud and
but
too
hey,
much.
we all have those
he
friends.
He often sounds like he's whining rather than talking. But,
that's
I mean,
awesome.
He's our guy.
We all have our friends. Yeah,
listen
yeah.
to Odd Normal if you like Fiasco Jones.
Dude,
listen to
like that's the thing. Like Fiasco has his own little podcast called Odd Normal, and I'm telling you.
All right, enough of that. Wesley Wise says,
toasted.
Love this podcast.
He stuck his hand up in my
Morgan
face.
Is a top-notch journalist, very knowledgeable, and he's found a great compliment with co-host Cold Coffee.
Oh, does he also talk
now,
about
now, no, hold on, he says this. Sometimes the show runs a little long with the rambling, but for the most part, sure. It's just the right blend of MMA rants, analysis, and interviews. Best part is the pre- and post-fight interview audio with the fighters. Please keep this coming. I miss many of the videos, but always catch the audio. The post-fight content is terrific. We have ideas there. Keep up the awesome work, guys. Highly recommended. And then Rod 1042 just says, always deliver. So
thank you, fellas.
Strong feedback. So listen, yeah. If you want to give us 5 stars like these people, please do log into iTunes and tell us. If you want to give us motherfucking 6 stars like we gave the Lyft driver tonight because we were drunk on our way back.
And she played Prince. She pulled out the Prince.
That's just Prince, Purple Rain.
That which is my favorite. It's like one of my favorite karaoke stars. But the fact that, yeah, let's give props to Prince, one of the greatest artists of all times. Happy birthday. That was good shit. That was good pulled feedback. It out.
Oh, you were you were saying that.
What?
Prince is good.
Well, no, and the Uber driver was good, too.
All right, so listen, before we go back into 2.5, I did want to ask you about this. And Jose, I want to ask you because I don't want to steal your thunder because you've had a chance to really talk to a lot of the fighters this week, but the weigh-in issue has been a big thing, right? Dana White earlier this week was on the UFC Unfiltered podcast, and he said, listen, we're trying to get rid of the early weigh-ins. We're going to change some things. And listen, I tweeted about it, and I'm not a guy that – I don't tweet a lot of my feelings or my opinions on stuff. I probably need to do more of it. I don't know. I feel like why should I tweet about something? I don't know. I need to change that. I've said that like I need to be more like write about more stuff and say about more stuff. But this was something I felt so strong about that I actually tweeted about. I was like, listen, we can't just change things back to the way they used to be. Like they it wasn't good. And my biggest thing is that, like, look, I don't care what time the people weigh in. I really don't. You know, 9 to 11, whatever, sure. 11 to 1, 1 to 3, 3 to 5, 5 to 7, whatever it may be. The thing that I don't like about the old system is that what guys used to do is they used to have to come in. They used to have to make weight in front of Burt Watson or whoever else. And then, you know, sit there for an hour and then go to the arena and still be on wait and sit there and wait. And then, you know what I mean? And the whole, I mean, hours they had to be on wait. The new system, I get it. More people are missing weight. It's happening. More people are missing weight. Statistics show out. Mike Bond has shown the statistics bear out that more people are missing weight. But I don't think that just going away from it fixes it, because the thing about it to me that makes a lot of sense is that the way it's set up now is that guys can be sitting in the sauna, they can, you know, they can do what they have to do, and then, you know, as soon as they realize, oh shit, I'm 155 or I'm 170 or I'm 185, they can run down to the scale, they can jump on the scale, literally they're there for 5 minutes tops. They drink some water. They start eating. Yeah, not even that. And they're done. So we're talking about guys and gals being miserable for hours versus, you know, miserable for 5 minutes. Now, listen, I've had some discussions with people online. I get it. The best situation is nobody cuts weight at all. But nobody's figured out a way yet. Nobody's figured out a way to make people stop cutting weight. So understanding and believing that they're probably going to cut weight, I just think that going back to the old way makes no goddamn sense whatsoever. And you, and I've been listening, I've been watching, I've been hearing, you have talked to damn near every fighter that's here this week. And because, you know, we've been working together side by side or whatever, I mean, bottom line is, every time I've heard you, I have yet to hear one person say, yeah, this system sucks. Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's been pretty. I asked almost every single fighter, and I asked Coach Perillo, Zahabi, Mike Dolce, and Coach Mike Brown all their opinions. The coaches were a little mixed. They were like, "Oh, whatever is comfortable, our fighters." They kind of give the diplomatic answer. Mike Dolce was hot about. He really wanted the early weigh-ins to stick around, but in terms of the fighters, a lot of them were like, yeah, I'll do whatever the UFC says, but if I had a choice, I would 100% want to weigh in in the morning. Megan Anderson was fired up. She's like, no, we need to keep it in the morning. Robert Whittaker surprisingly said he likes the old way because he doesn't cut a lot of weight to make 185. And his reasoning was he liked to see his opponent struggle on the scale. He liked to see the battle, and he liked to see him suffer so he can look in his eyes and go, I'm healthier than you, and you missed weight, blah, blah, blah. Rafael Dos Anjos was similar. Like, he doesn't have to cut a lot of weight to 170. And he says he likes to cut weight in the morning and then weigh in, so he doesn't want to have to – pretty much like he doesn't want to have to wake up earlier to cut weight. Carla Esparza says she only cuts like 4 or 5 pounds, so it didn't really matter to her. And obviously, heavyweights, it doesn't matter. They were more concerned.
Of course.
They were more – a lot. Curtis Blaydes, for example, was more concerned for his teammates. It's like, I see my teammates suffering, and I know they would rather weigh in the morning. But it all came down to they like to weigh in, like you said. Like, they only have to be on weight for like – maximum 5 minutes, and if they're on weight for 5 minutes, that seems a little weird. There might be a line for weigh-in, but like 30 seconds and then 36 hours to rehydrate.
Right.
I talked to Shorty Torres in Utica, and it was the first time he'd ever had 36 hours to rehydrate, and he had to lose 26 pounds in 9 days, and then all of a sudden he's like, whoa, I have a day and a half to rehydrate. This is awesome. And I asked him, and he was like, there's no way I could go back to the old way. After doing this once, he couldn't go back to the old way. Same thing CM Punk said. Same thing Mike Jackson said. So, yeah, it's safe to say fighters want to keep it the early morning weigh-ins.
I just say, and here's the other thing that I say, and again, I'm not a guy that likes to be like, I'm the one that knows all the right answers, but I feel like I've been around the fighters a lot, and I feel like there's no question about it. The morning weigh-ins are the way to go. But here's the other thing, too, is that, listen, if the UFC does end up making a decision like this and they just change everything,
it's crazy,
and they don't have anything for the fighters. Listen, the fighter union thing, you know, the Leslie Smith thing. Look, fighters, the TV deal's already done, right? Like, you're not getting any piece of that ESPN money. I'm sorry, it was too late. It's whatever. And it would be amazing for them to get that. And they should, man. They should be fighting for their money. But more than fighting for your money, it's fighting for stuff like this.
Rights. Fighter rights.
That's it, man. Don't let, you know, an organizational person make a decision that involves me, that affects me, that doesn't, like, allow me any way in what's – to me, like, this is – I mean,
this
I know
is
this –
where collective bargaining would have to come in.
That's what I'm saying. This may sound stupid, but even more than how much money the fighters make, stuff like this – stuff like this.
Yep.
When do I get to weigh in? When does my body have to be dehydrated? When that's where I really want to have some say. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, things like this are the moment that people need to realize that, yes, there has to be some type of organization. You know, I get it, man. The financial battle and all that, I totally understand it. But to me, this is even worse than the financial battle. Like, dude, you're telling me when I have to be on weight, how I have to be on weight, and I'm telling you what makes me feel better and safer as a fighter.
Safety is the biggest.
And you're not listening to me? Safety? You got to.
I mean, especially after that Darren Till video came out.
Yeah.
Like, that was horrifying.
The whole thing about the Darren Till video that's terrible is, like, that's not even rare.
No.
It's just rare that it got published.
It was, and one of the things I brought up to a lot of fighters was, in I was surprised at that this wasn't the norm, is when Wonderboy was like, no, Darren can't blow up to 200.
Right.
I don't want to give him that advantage. He has to weigh in again on fight night. And a lot of the fighters are like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and I hope that becomes the norm now. Like,
yeah.
If I don't want my opponent quitting with 2 pounds left knowing they can just blow up. Like, no. If they quit at 2 pounds, they should have to weigh in again. And they was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Why doesn't this happen more? And the fighters didn't have an answer.
Hey, dude, I said from the very beginning, you got to put a weight limit. All right, let's go back to 225 real quick. Let's finish out the main card real quick. I mean, you mentioned Megan Anderson, Holly Holm. That is a big, I mean, literally, we could spend hours breaking down this card. I mean, every fight in this card is sick. But let's just round out the main card real quick. Megan Anderson, Holly Holm is big. Andre Arlovski, Tai Tuivasa is big. CM Punk, Mike Jackson is big in a weird way, right? I mean, not the same way, but Jose, let's start with you. I mean, out of those three fights, which one are you most looking forward to, or most feel, you know, kind of excited about?
I'm big on the Megan Anderson fight. I like.
Yep. Sorry.
I always like watching Holly Holm fight. The women's featherweight division, I think, deserves, like, this is the first fight where the winner is like a, I don't want, Holly said she wants to go back to bantamweight, but she's a big bantamweight. Yeah. Megan Anderson is a legit featherweight. Like, she's not going to 135.
How big is she?
I always forget how tall
big,
and
ripped, exact. Strong.
She is a legit women's featherweight.
She ain't going to 135.
Hell no.
Anybody, so, I think Cole Coffey, when we actually sat down there earlier this week, she, I mean, didn't she say she walks around like 175?
She's like 6 foot 170. Yeah. That's bigger than me. And she's just ripped to shreds.
Same as me. I mean, I'm 6 foot one, 170. That's way bigger than
over,
me.
I'm just barely over 170.
Sure, sure. Yep. And Cyborg herself said she's like, because she fought Tanya Evinger. That was a bantamweight that went up. She fought Kuniskaya, who was short notice, like jumped from Invicta. Like, she's really excited that this seems to be the first true number one contenders fight where she knows she's fighting someone that deserves the fight. And you know Cyborg's down to fight anyone. And she also really wants the women's – she's worked really hard to get the women's featherweight division spotlighted in the UFC. And I kind of think that this is a payoff where, like, yeah, I'm the champion, and now we're getting a real number one contender
fight. It's a weird fight for me because I'll be honest with you. I mean, I am excited about this fight as well because it does make sense. It's kind of opening up the division a little bit. I do think it's a weird matchup because I think Megan Anderson, as big and strong and powerful as she is, I think she's going to have a little bit of trouble chasing Holly Holm around, man, that movement. And I do love Holly Holm this week. I love the scrum that she had the other day where she was talking about, listen, I didn't even bother studying Megan so much. I studied myself and the bad habits I have. And I'll be honest with you, I think those were the biggest issues that were on the table sometimes was the bad habits that Holly Holm has, the repetition that she has, the predictability that she has. But her movement and her athleticism, I think is going to prove problematic for Megan Anderson. But I do think this is a big fight. Cole Coffey, what about you? Out of those three last main card fights, man, which one are you most excited about?
I'm definitely very excited about the Holly Holm and Anderson fight just because, I mean, I think it's interesting and it's exciting to see that division shaping up to actually have some real contenders.
To be a real division.
You know, to be a real division. And, I mean, and let's be honest, as a man, I mean, like, they're studs. They're literally badass fighters and they're super, super hot fighters as well. So, I'm like, legit. It's everything that's fun that a guy wants to watch in a fight. You got two hot chicks. Totally destroying each other out in the fight.
High quality martial arts
that's,
too.
Yeah, that's what I mean, like that's awesome. But also, I mean, like Arlovski and Tuivasa. That's a fun one. I mean, like I think everybody's excited. I mean, like we don't even need to talk about the Punk Jackson in the sense that people want to watch the circus sideshow. They want to see whatever's going to happen. Like there's no need to even bring that in. But the fact that you know we've talked a little about Tuivasa and Arlovski, whether Arlovski's at the end and here's this also this up and coming guy, and you know I had said earlier I'd pick Tuivasa and I'm still sticking with after talking with them both, but after talking to Andre, I mean you just love that dude.
I
mean
love
like
that guy.
He's so exciting and he's not feeling like he's anywhere near the end of his days fighting, and he feels that you know here's just another young guy that just needs to get taken out, and he believes he can do it, and that's great, and he has every bit of skill to do it. So out of those three fights, I think they're all very, very exciting. I'm probably most excited to see the Holm-Anderson, but probably right after that, the Arlovski-Tuivasa, but the Punk and Jackson, I mean, that could be great just because there's that what-if factor, and just as much as you like to go see a circus or some weird art show. You go in hopes that you're going to see something that's going to surprise you. Right. That's what I'm hoping.
Well, it's further proof that we should probably do more like pre-event or pre-show discussion about what my plan is for, you know, how we're going to lay out the show. You just said, you know, we don't need to care about Punk and Jackson. I want everybody to hear CM Punk. I listen. Okay. We're in Chicago. We're in the land of, you know, CM Punk. We went to Pequot's tonight
that
because
was
he told us to go.
It
was
great.
I like CM Punk. I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know shit about him as a wrestler. I've never seen him wrestle. I don't know a match. I've never seen
anything.
He
actually ate
I don't know
Hulk
anything.
Hogan. But he ate Hulk Hogan alive in a thing.
Yeah, did he beat Andre the Giant?
And he beat Andre the Giant.
What about the Ultimate Fighter? Or the Ultimate Warrior. The Ultimate Warrior. The Ultimate Fighter.
He beat him, too.
Just names two dead wrestlers.
And the Iron Sheik, he beat
could he
them
beat
all.
Those two dead men? No, all right. But, no, listen, I don't know anything about wrestling, but I'm telling you, I like this guy's attitude, man. I just love the way he approached the sport. I love the fact that he came in and said, listen, I don't know if I'm going to be good. I don't know if I'm going to be good or not. I'm going to try this. Fortunately, I'm wealthy. Fortunately, I have a huge social media following.
A hot wife.
And
who's a New York Times bestseller, I might add.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Writing
autobiography.
About what? For what?
Her biography. She wrote, like, her story, like, in the wrestling world and growing up. Like, she's a big mental health advocate. I think she's, like, like bipolar. Or, I don't,
really?
I don't know exactly what it is, but she's very big on advocating for mental health.
Well,
she's
respect
like
to that. And let's just say, I mean, if that is the truth, if that happens to be right, let's just throw it out. Dude, if you haven't seen Bipolar Rock and Roller from Mauro Ranallo,
oh my God,
so good.
I haven't, but I want to watch it.
Also, you haven't seen it?
Oh, it's very
good.
Dude,
it's so good. But anyway, I'm just saying, I like CM Punk, and I understand why people would hate him. I understand why people wouldn't like him. I like CM Punk, and I like...
Well, there's no reason to hate him. But you're agreeing the fact that there's trolls that just want to hate against somebody that's done shit. I mean, there's no reason. If you've never met this guy, there's no reason to fucking hate CM Punk. Phil Brooks is like probably one of the nicest guys we've ever interviewed. He does everything right, and I can't find a UFC staffer that has had any bad dealings with him.
He even recommends the right pizza places.
And he recommends a good pizza place. So, I mean, like, if you're hating on him, then you're just trolling to troll because... I've never seen myself him say a bad word that's pissed somebody off, and I've never seen him, I've never heard of anybody saying he's done anything bad. So if you're trolling on,
Jose's holding back over there. He wants to just unleash
them. For the trolls that are constantly calling him out, it's because his character in wrestling was very curmudgeon-y. Like his gimmick that he lived was when say Brock Lesnar came in or The Rock or all these part-time wrestlers. So CM Punk holds the record for longest WWE title reign ever in the modern era.
Right.
He never headlined WrestleMania. He was never given an opportunity. During his 400-plus day run, he rarely headlined pay-per-views. They would always stick him in the co-main event and The Rock would come in or they'd do a tag team or they would always make Punk and his title second tier. And he was so bitter about all these part-timers would come in and take his spot. And now what's he doing? Now what is he doing to the eyes of the casual fans? He is what he hated, and people are using that against him. But at the same time, how much of that was his gimmick? How much of that was actually him? I mean, he himself said that his gimmick was pretty much him. His pipe bomb that he did, which was like a rocket in his ass and shot him to the moon, that was him talking off the cusp, and he aired out all his grievances. But at the same time, he said he didn't want to wrestle for the last 5 years of his WWE career. He was burnt out 5 years into his career, and he was doing it because he was good at it. He was getting paid to do it, and his friend he was just good at it. And so you just really have to wonder how much of that was just burnout, or how much of that he really felt. Like in his case, I watched some of his case. He was crying, and he's like, I don't even care about have any of the things I was complaining about 4 years ago. I don't care about it anymore. I just want to move on. I'm over it. He said he's over it. So I think a lot of the trolls are just used to that angry, aggressive, curmudgeon-y, bitter CM Punk from wrestling, and that's just not him. They don't know the real him.
I agree. So, listen, I had a chance to sit down with him earlier this week. Again, I don't know much about him as a wrestler, but I just like the dude as a human being, and we had a little discussion, and here's what we heard.
Well, Punk, here it is, the second fight week, second time around. I got to ask, what's the emotion like? What's the feeling like? How does it differ versus, the huge buildup and all the uncertainty of the first time around?
I'm just happy that I'm not in a courtroom right now. So, I'm kind of numb to a lot of stuff, but it's exciting to be here. It just means I'm 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day, 1 step closer to fighting on Saturday.
Let's talk about that courtroom just real quick. I mean...
Okay.
I was just saying, just bizarre that you had to go through all this, right? I mean, the timing could not have been worse.
Sure.
How did that impact your final days of preparation?
A very, very broad answer is it didn't, I knew it was coming. They delayed it as long as they could because I think they knew, it was, I think the general consensus is, wow, this is really going to mess with him. Yeah, I'm a different I'm a different breed, though. You know, I was planning for it, and we worked around it, and all the hard work was done anyway. So, you know, easy peasy.
Very cool. It feels like a load off your shoulders now.
It feels like more than a load off my shoulders. Like it still hasn't sunk in, and it probably won't for a while. But I'm happy it's over.
Very cool. All right, let's talk about the fight. I mean, you came into this thing very realistic, right? You said, look, I don't know if I'm going to be any good or not, but I'm going to give it a shot. You know, you get your first taste, it doesn't go your way. What drove you to do it again? I mean, was there any part of you that said, hey, I did it? You know what I mean? I accomplished the goal. It didn't work out, but I did it, and I'm done. How did you know, no, I got to do this again?
I just think it was never about, oh, I just want to try it, you know, the one time. You know, I think it was about, you know, if I'm going to try it, I'm going to try it. And that means you deal with the losses, and you deal with the bad days as well as the good days.
That first experience, I mean, you're no stranger to crowds, you're no stranger to cameras, big arenas, but what was the feeling like? I mean, were there nerves? Did it feel different than you expected?
I mean, reassessing everything now, and like, you know, being able to step back, I think I was too chill. I think I was too relaxed, you know? Like, I was just waiting for, like, the super anxiety and the nerves to kick in, you know? And it didn't ever really happen. You know, like obviously the first big oh shit moment is, oh, he's got my hips. Hey, all right. You know, like I'm in trouble. But I don't know either way if that affected me, and I can't say if that was good or bad. It's just, you know, it's something I've never done before. So it's like I have that under my belt now. Going into this, I do believe just the experience of the one time, even though it was a loss, I think it's going to help.
No doubt. What was the conversation like with Dana and the UFC to get this again, right? Because, I mean, you had to come back and say, hey, thank you. Can you give me one more shot? How did that go? Were they receptive? Did you have to convince them? What did it go like?
I mean, I the next day I told Dana, I was driving home from Cleveland, you know, and I was stopping at every rest stop along the way and just eating whatever I could. A steady diet of just pumpkin spice lattes and whatever pastries the Starbucks had. But I text him, like, I apologize. I was like, yeah, sorry, I shit the bed. Like, you know, on to the next one, let's go. And, you know, and he was just like, bro, it was your first fight. Don't worry about it, you know. And I can't remember the exact conversation, but he was receptive. It wasn't like, I'm pretty sure I was very self-deprecating. And I said, if you want to cut me, I understand. But, you know, I'm going to fight again, so.
Was it a blow to your ego? I mean, here you are, you're this massive superstar in another realm, and then you come into to mixed martial arts, and you don't get that level of success right away. I mean, was it a blow to your ego at all? Was it difficult to stomach?
No, I think, you know, obviously everybody has an ego. I think people's perception of me is that I have a huge one, but I really don't think I do. And I just called me a superstar, and I don't view myself you know, through that lens at all. Like, I get it. Like, I did some stuff, you know, like, whatever. But when it comes to all the stuff that I think maybe MMA fans think matter, like, oh, being on the pay-per-view, being on the poster, like, I'm like, whatever. I'm more like, if I can fight earlier, I'd like to fight earlier, because I try not to train at 9 o'clock at night, and I'd be showered and, you know, elbow deep in a pizza and pint of ice cream before y'all get into the building. So why are you mad?
Are you surprised that people have been in such an uproar over you're on the pay-per-view?
No, I get it. You know, I get it. But I think it just comes with perspective. And my perspective is, the hell are you so mad about? You know, like, if you don't think I would trade my spot, like, whatever. I don't care. I think, you know, like, at my best, I'm just like, whatever. And if I feel like being argumentative with them, and half of them are trolls anyway, why do I understand the fight game better than people who, you know, have followed it for, you know, however long, or
right,
people who are in it? It's just like, if you're on the card and you're not getting pay-per-view points, and you're on the pay-per-view, you don't want to be there. You want to be on the prelims. You fight earlier, you're done quicker, there's more eyeballs on you. And what's the difference?
Yep, makes sense to me. Talk to me about the focus since UFC 203. I mean, so you knew right away, like, oh, this is a continued journey, I want to do this. I mean, were you back in the gym right away? Did you take a break? I mean, what was the path like, and what was the focus like? I mean, you have a steep learning curve, right? I mean, you're learning on the highest level, so was it just basic techniques? Was it mental? I mean, what's been the focus of getting from there to here?
you're talking about like day after,
yeah,
day after
start
the
there.
I was back in the gym right away. I didn't take any extended breaks except for like injury, you know. And then you know you're injured, and all you want to do is train. So it's, you know, it's a mind trap. But the goals are always the same, and it's very basic and it's very easy. I don't have a problem that like an Anthony Pettis has, or like a Gerald Meerschaert, or like any of these high level guys that I train with have. They're not trying to tweak something or, you know, work on something. I'm just trying to get better at everything. It's pretty basic and it's pretty easy, you know. So the drive is always there to do the work, to get better. And, you know, from then until now, the biggest change is seeing and actually like feeling, instead of just the coaches telling me, hey, you did this right, hey, you're getting better at this. Because a lot of the times, you know, it's not like I'm watching training footage of myself. So like I trust what they say, and if they tell me, hey, you did this good in sparring, or you did this different, and then I don't feel it, it's hard to process it. But this time the experiences are exponentially different when I'm actually catching guys, you know. And you know what happens in the gym stays in the gym, so it's, you know, it's neither here nor there, but like they're just confidence boosters that occur along the way, and they're like, you know, to me they're milestones.
You see the differences in yourself.
Absolutely, I do. Yeah,
fantastic.
Very much.
Mike campaigned for this fight, right? I mean, he was going out. When you see that, do you take offense to that, or are you like, you know, why am I the guy to get picked on, or why are you trying to worry, you know, why are you so worried about me? Like, if they'll give you a fight, they'll give you a fight. Just, I mean, what do you think when you see him out there campaigning for it?
No, because I think everybody campaigns to fight me, you know, which is the kind of ironic thing. You're a bum, you don't belong in the UFC, but I'll fight you. You know, it's just like, okay, well, you know, I don't know. I get it. And it is what it is, you know, like, it's the... People like to call, oh, it's the fight game, and it's this and it's that. But really what it is just the talk shit business. So if you got thin skin, you know, it's probably not for you. And everybody, I think, just calls me out and whatever. I could care less.
What are the stakes of this fight for you? Because I think, do you feel like a career is at stake here? I mean, is this like one of those moments like, I've got to prove that I can continue to do this? I mean, is it that type of moment for you? Or
I definitely feel that, but it's not. It's not the weight of the world pressure. You know, I definitely feel that, like, with all the talk of, you know, like, I shouldn't be here to begin with, and I definitely should have gotten cut after the last fight. You know, I'm probably on the chopping block. But who knows? Maybe not. I don't know. I don't look past Saturday. And I'm tired of training, I'm sick of training, and I wish I was doing something else, or I had my eyes set on, you know, doing movies or becoming a pro golfer, or, you know, working in the mailroom somewhere. I still enjoy training every single day. I still am fortunate that can be my full-time job. I train with guys who have, you know, one, two other side jobs, and, you know, and I see how hard they work, and it just motivates me to work harder, because, you know, I don't got to go to work technically. You know, I get to go to the gym. So we'll have to see what happens Saturday night, you know, and maybe it's a question for Sunday morning, but I got all the confidence in the world, in myself, and mostly in my team.
There's people that'll say, I saw this experiment. I saw it, you know, great CM Punk, nice guy. They gave him a shot, didn't work out. Why do I want to watch it again? I mean, what do you say to those people? Why do they want to tune in and watch you again?
I could give a fuck if they watch or not. Don't watch, you know? If you bought, you know, the Kiss album that came out before they took their makeup off, and you didn't like it, don't buy the fucking album where they take their makeup off. You know, it's a gimmick. Like, don't watch. You know, but you're still gonna go complain about it on Twitter. I can't. It's none of my business what you think of me. I don't care.
What's success for you? Is it a victory, or could you maybe lose the fight but show improvements, feel better, and feel like there's moral victories there?
No, because if I define success based on somebody else's opinion or perspective. Listen, I could beat them in record time with some amazing of like, you know, $50,000 bonus making move, and then the same people who say I don't belong here and hate me before are just going to say, oh, you didn't beat anybody. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, what matters to me is gaining the knowledge, having fun along the way, what my wife and my dog think of me, and then coaches and teammates, you know, and it trickles down from there. And I'd say, you know, like family, friends, teammates, but that's one thing. That's all one group. So those are the people I care about.
Now that you've experienced this overall, I'm sure you've played this thing out in your mind. You've done it once before. You know how it's going to feel. You know how it's going to look. You know all those things. How do you see this fight playing out?
I see myself taking my time and getting a little comfortable. I think that was a big thing. I just kind of need to get in there for a couple seconds and bounce around and just be in the octagon for a little bit. You know, I think last time I was just thinking like, well, the quicker I start, the quicker it's over. I was kind of right. You know, this time it's going to be a little bit different, you know, so I'm just going to kind of take my time, you know, make sure I'm doing all the little things the right way, orient myself to where I'm at, find out where my coaches are, make sure I can hear them, and just take it slow. And then the object from that point is to have fun.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was CM Punk. In the meantime, Cole Caulfield kind of took a little nap over there.
My professional wrestling talk literally put him to sleep.
It literally put me out.
Again, I don't want to reveal what time it is.
It's
but,
fucking late.
The weigh-in start in like 30 minutes is basically kind of where we're at at this point. So, listen, we could literally break down this card all night.
But we won't.
But we shouldn't. All right, let's just talk about it.
You can. Just wake me up.
All right.
Megan Anderson? What?
Huh?
All right. Listen, all right, I'll run through this line. This line is sick. Curtis Blaydes, Alistair Overeem. Carlos Esparza, Claudia Gadelha. Mirsad Bektic versus... Wait. By the way, the mustache.
Oh,
the
my Mirsad, God. It was glorious.
The glorious mustache.
Threw me off at
Bektic
first. Threw me off. I was like,
in our friend
that?
That was strong. I know that Mike Dolce always loves showing Mirsad Bektic's, you know, weight cuts, but dude, you roll in with a mustache like that. That's strong. Rashad Coulter versus Chris De La Rocha. Love me some Rashad Coulter, of course. That's Dallas's own. Of course, I always support Dallas. I will say, is it secret knowledge that he was like having some Chicago deep dash? I mean, I guess you're a heavyweight. Like, if you're a heavyweight, you get to do what you do,
far,
right?
One of the most interesting.
Even when you
I
look
had.
On his like, I look.
Oh, he posted it publicly.
No. When I look on his on the UFC site,
yeah.
Last time he weighed in, I think it carries the last time you weighed in.
Yeah.
He was 245.
Oh, of course, yeah. He doesn't have to cut weight.
Yeah. So,
but it's just funny. Like, it's just funny to see a fighter. I mean, he only had like one piece, and then he had salad. But it is funny to see like. You know, fight we could do eating pizza. Rashad Evans versus Anthony Smith.
Oh, my God.
Dude, Rashad Evans was amazing today. Go check that out on YouTube. I would probably play the audio here, except that I know it would never make it there because Cole Coffey is falling asleep over there. Anthony Smith, I love Anthony Smith. I've told the story a million times. Met him years and years ago at an airport. He was in like a four-fight losing streak, and he was like, I'm going to be in the UFC. And I was like,
sure, dude.
No, you're not. And then he did, dude. He's
now
a beast.
Now he's just in the UFC fighting Rashad Evans.
It's crazy. Joseph Benavidez, Sergio Pettis, Clay Guida, Charles Oliveira. That's a ridiculous fight. Not Clay Guida versus Bobby Yellow.
Bobby Yellow.
Clay Guida has been talking some shit about Bobby Green. And then Dan Ige versus Mike Santiago. I mean, dude, this whole card is loaded. I'll just ask you, Jose, real quick. Out of all those, I know those were a ton of fights. Any story, any person, any fight itself that you're like most stoked about watching?
I am very excited for Curtis Blaydes, Alistair Overeem. I know that's like the easy pick, but I think it's very fascinating that this is Curtis Blaydes' second straight former K-1 champion. He's fought like he ragdolled Mark Hunt, and now he's fighting Overeem. He's only 27, and I asked him this like he's so young. He's the same age as me. And the heavyweight division's knock is like it's the oldest division. Mm-hmm. It's stagnant. It's like the same five fighters. Daniel Cormier is on the verge of retiring. If he wins the belt and retires in a year, that division is wide open. 27-year-old Curtis Blaydes beat Alistair Overeem. That's new blood. That is the like everyone goes. Francis is a new up and coming fighter. He's not the youngest guy. Stipe is like mid-30s, not the youngest guy. Curtis Blaydes 27. Alistair Overeem had 46 fights before Curtis Blaydes even had his first.
That's great.
This is a fascinating matchup.
And dude, and when you just talk about the heavyweight division, when we talk about Arlovski and Tuivasa,
yeah,
and then that fight as well. I mean, that's two. And it's so, dude, is, I mean, I love Arlovski. I love Overeem, man. Those dudes have been around forever, but man, that's the ruthlessness of this game, right? At some point, the young bucks start taking over.
And, all right, don't start.
I know young bucks sounds like wrestling. Shut the fuck up.
I wasn't even going to say that. Hey, John, are you all in?
I'm not all in.
Oh, man.
You can ask me a question about hockey. Cool coffee. We talked about a lot of fights there, man. I mean, dude, again, we could sit here and talk for hours about this, except that you have to edit this, and you're already falling asleep. So,
if I had to pick one just that we haven't really talked about or whatever that I think is going to be interesting, be Clay Guida and Charles Oliveira.
I think that's
going to be a fun little fight.
Especially Clay Guida fighting here in Chicago, man. Yeah, he's pumped up. CM Guida. He's Chicago made.
Yeah. I want to see. He believes that the rafters are literally going to come off the roof.
Yeah.
He didn't say as much, but he said that it's going to be as loud as it can be. So I'm excited to see if that is actually true, and he's got a super, super tough test against him. I remember thinking when he was fighting Anthony Pettis, I was like, oh, Pettis is going to smoke him, and Guida pulled it out. So this is another tough one that on paper, part of my heart wants Clay to win, but another part of me says that Charles Oliveira is super, super tough, and if Clay doesn't watch it, Charles is gonna submit him. But that's an exciting fight. So if there was one out of the prelims that I think people should probably pay attention, that's probably one of the ones.
I will say for me, if you're listening to this and you have time, go watch the Rashad Evans video on YouTube. The Hashaji. Hashad, no respect, nobody. Watch the Rashad Evans. Dude, Rashad was in such a great place. I would play the audio here, but the problem would be that if I did that, Cold Coffee would fall asleep and nobody would ever get this episode. It would never be uploaded anywhere. So do me a favor. Go to YouTube because, obviously, I followed Rashad throughout his entire career, man. I feel like we've been there front row. And I know his career is kind of winding down, but I don't think it's quite over yet. And, dude, he was in such a good place, man. His his emotions, his happiness. I've seen him in some bad places on Fight Week or just frustration or whatever. And, man, he seems to be in a good place. And, again, I love Anthony Smith, man, where he came from and everything he's done. So,
yeah, you do.
This card is ridiculous. All right, speaking of ridiculous, I think the weigh-in's starting in about 10 minutes. So what we need to do is we need to wrap this up so that we can go shoot the official weigh-ins, shoot the ceremonial weigh-ins, because that's what we do. We got a bunch of interviews coming also that we shot over at the Constellation Beverages. We got to have a Ballast Point home game on the road. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous. It's been nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to stop so that we can go to the weigh-ins.
He's back.
Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.